Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And for this, the Topic Hour, I feature interviews on a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. Well, this week we're considering, could you forgive the unforgivable? Life can bring us great challenges, place us in seemingly unbearable situations. Darkness may come and seem to obscure all light. How is it possible to experience terrible tragedy or injustice or inhumanity and not be consumed by rage, bitterness, and thoughts of revenge? What possible means is there to move through such experiences and process shock, grief, and suffering? Is it even possible? Or do we just convince ourselves that we've reached a place of peace? And another dimension of forgiveness is the personal. When we've acted in ways we deeply regret, how do we forgive ourselves? Can we allow ourselves to be forgiven and redeemed? Nelson Mandela, who had 27 years of potential hatred to vent on his oppressors, said, "Forgiveness liberates the soul. It removes fear. That's why it's such a powerful weapon." He also said, "I am what I am because of who we all are." Recognizing the interconnectedness of all life. And we can acknowledge the beauty of his words, their truth and power, but still the difficult circumstance remains. The thorny reality persists. Something dreadful occurred. And to forgive, somehow, that unforgivable act must be excused. Now, usually for the Topic Hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street. However, for this week's topic, I'm breaking with that format slightly to give some insight into this question, could you forgive the unforgivable? I'm very happy to have two special guests on the show, both associated with the feature documentary film Risking Light, which recently had its world premiere at Cinequest Film and VR Festival in San Jose, California, where it's been very well received. It was listed in two top 10 films to see at Cinequest lists by Area Media. Quite an achievement, as there were 130 premieres. And Risking Light is described as the stories of three people in very different circumstances who had the courage to step out of the haunting, tragic darkness of the past, risking everything to reach the light of their own compassion. It's a thought-provoking documentary that explores resilience and the painful process of moving from grief to compassion and forgiveness, challenging us to ask, what would the world look like if we could learn to forgive one another? My guests are Dawn Mickelson, Risking Light senior producer, director, writer, and editor, and Miranda Wilson, Risking Light producer. And Dawn Mickelson is an Emmy Award-winning producer with work seen on PBS, Out TV, Free Speech TV, and at numerous international festivals. She's completed four award-winning independent feature documentaries and is a frequent producer for public television. Welcome to the show, Dawn.
Thank you for having me. This is a wonderful topic. Obviously, I'm drawn to it myself.
Well, that's why we're both here together at this moment. And Miranda Wilson is an Emmy-nominated producer with a background in radio, television, and U.S. politics. Her production work has appeared on Twin Cities Public Television, Food Network, and Sundance Channel. Welcome, Miranda.
Thank you, Ruth. It's nice to be here.
Great. Well, Dawn, I'd like to talk about each of the three stories featured in the film, but first I wanted to get a sense of what brought you to this project. I understand your previous film work includes stories about torture, domestic violence, and inhumane governmental policies across the globe. How did you find yourself considering the subject of forgiving the unforgivable in the film Risking Light?
Well, I think that you actually started exactly where I started. It was the past work that brought me to this. It was working on subject matter where it was incredibly painful as a storyteller to see that side of humanity so often, to see torture, domestic violence, etc. And although each of those stories had endings that were, you know, powerful and these were survivors, it still left me as a storyteller feeling like I needed to find the healing, the good in humanity. And so I was looking for that for my next film and met Mary Johnson, who is the first story is about Mary and O'Shea, and Mary's son was killed by O'Shea. And she found it in herself to forgive O'Shea, and not only to forgive O'Shea, but the two of them were able to reconcile and become like mother and son to one another. And, you know, I'm sitting there in a living room listening to Mary tell this story and realize this is exactly where I need to go. This is the thing that I need to pursue, not only because the story is powerful for humanity, but the story is what I need to hear right now. And so, yeah, it started there. And then also feeling like, you know, you could do a story just about Mary and O'Shea, but I felt it was important to look at the concept of forgiveness on a broader scale in the sense of, religion, so that we're not just looking at it through a Christian lens. So,
yes, yeah.
You know, the three stories have very different religious backgrounds or lack thereof in the case of Deborah, who is more spiritual than religious. And, you know, wanting to see other ways of defining forgiveness, but they're still tied together with kind of a core definition of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was interesting. I was just going to say that, you know, with the topics that you had previously covered, you know, one could argue that that might have kind of doubled you down on being more sort of vengeful in a way, you know what I mean? Because when you hear terrible things like about torture and abuse and things like that, you know, a very common response is just to want to those people to suffer in the same way, you know, the whole kind of eye for an eye thing. But, you know, just the feeling of it's outrageous, you know, to have done that to somebody, that it's hard sometimes to, well, and for a lot of the time, almost impossible to have any compassion for the people or understanding of why those people might have committed those acts. So, you know, it could have made you very cynical and bitter, your other work. But it sounds like what you're saying is that in some ways it was a bit depressing. So you were looking for a way of showing humanity's, you know, there is more to us than this.
Absolutely. And I think I was also, I'd done a fair amount of work where the film had a subtle, but it was their call to action for people to get involved in a political fight of some sort, so it was also seeking a top-down resolution for some
right.
of the issues
oh, right.
that
yes.
were occurring. And what I am drawn to in terms of forgiveness is the notion that this really is bottom-up. This is led by a victim.
Yes.
This is led by, you know, this is, you can heal yourself.
Right.
And the ripple effect is profound. And that is really compelling to me, not waiting for somebody else to change your situation for you.
Yeah. Well, empowering, because I guess when something really dreadful happens, it's very disempowering, isn't it? You know, it's,
exactly.
It makes you feel very vulnerable as well in the world, I think. So, yeah, part of, yeah, forgiveness also would be getting your power back. I hadn't really thought
Absolutely.
About that. Yeah. So, Miranda, I wanted to ask you, what attracted you to work on this project?
I think initially it was working with Dawn. This is one of several projects that we have worked on together. And as we've talked about, it's multiple stories, multiple cultural contexts. And a big chunk of this work was in finding these stories and in finding people who were willing to tell the stories of their trauma and what they have done, you know, how they've moved on in life from that.
Yes.
And, you know, working as a producer in a lot of different contexts, you know, political and documentary, and even, you know, lighter things like food and so on, getting people to tell certain kinds of stories is very easy, especially when they're not about themselves. And this is a very intimate conversation to have with a stranger, essentially.
Yes.
And to talk about it in ways that other folks can understand and relate to, it just seemed like a really important opportunity.
Yeah.
And fascinating, as we've discussed, you know, different cultural contexts, different religious and spiritual contexts, to hear how people had arrived in similar spaces from completely different points of view seemed like an incredible opportunity. And
yeah. Yeah.
For learning even beyond what ended up in the film.
Right. Yeah. And what a producer does, I think, is quite a mystery to people outside the business. And it can involve quite different elements depending on the project. What did your role as producer on Risking Light involve?
Well, let's see. It has varied quite a bit over time.
Because it's about 7 years the film's been in the making. Yeah. Have you been attached to it the whole time?
I have been, Dawn, and I have been on this. I think she started a few months before I joined on to work with her. So, yes, it's been 7 years. So in the process of making a documentary, especially one that's kind of a scrappy operation like this one, it's everything from writing, you know, language and press releases to get folks to come and tell their story, to pre-interviewing people, to setting up studio for different shoots, to setting up, buying our websites and fleshing those out. We did two crowdfunding campaigns, so getting folks to shaping those campaigns and then also getting folks to donate during the course of them. We had a few grants that we applied for over the course of time. I actually was the field producer for the section with Wong in Cambodia.
Right.
So I traveled with him there for, I think it was about 10 days with his family, and, you know, did the interviews with him and his family and tried to make sure that his story of being in the U.S., but being of Cambodia and what that meant to him was reflected throughout that as well.
So, yeah, wow.
That's lots of different hats worn.
Lots of different hats, yeah. Well, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic this week, Could You Forgive the Unforgivable? With my special guests, filmmakers Dawn Mikkelsen and Miranda Wilson. We're going to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Do you like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
No white horses to play the game, and I wish I knew your name. Something about you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, baby, it just goes nowhere. Well, we can do the things we want, we can do the things we like, but if we're taking all the time, well, I just don't think that it's right. I think that there's more to life than just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has been an independent bookseller for over half a century in the community we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown. We love our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, online and in downtown Santa Cruz.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic this week, could you forgive the unforgivable? My special guests are filmmakers Dawn Mikkelsen and Miranda Wilson talking about the documentary feature Risking Light, which highlights three stories of people who have managed to move through terrible suffering to forgive the unforgivable. And if you're interested in finding out more about the film, you can go to the film website, riskinglight.com. Well, Dawn, in Risking Light, there are three quite different stories from the United States, Cambodia, and Australia. Could you tell us a bit about each of these stories and how you came to choose these three? You mentioned a little bit about Mary and O'Shea, but if you could let us know a bit more about the others and also how you came to these three stories.
Sure. So the second story, and the film is interwoven, so they're not necessarily presented in this way, but I'll explain them in the order in which we found them. The second story was when I started searching for global stories, and I, you know, put it out on Facebook, honestly, and said, anybody know any good stories outside of the United States? And a friend said that she was in a online group with Keelong Ung, who is a refugee from Cambodia who now lives in Portland, Oregon. And so she was like, I think Keelong's got a great story. I contacted Keelong and within minutes knew that that was our second story. Keelong's story is, you know, he survived the Khmer Rouge. He survived genocide. Dozens of his family members did not. He escaped to the United States and spent the next 20 plus years struggling with PTSD. He was living the American dream. You know, he'd gone to college, gotten a master's degree, was gotten married, had children, had done all those, you know, good things that, you know, we expect a successful person to have done. And yet he was still struggling with profound PTSD and wanting to seek revenge. And so when he had the opportunity to go back to Cambodia, he was given the opportunity to exact that revenge on one person in particular. And so his story is how he chose forgiveness. And then the ripple effect of that in his life and the life of his community.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the impetus for revenge is a feeling that that will finally expunge all the horrible feelings, isn't it? And I think that, you know, there are people who've spoken who have sort of had some kind of revenge who found that it actually hasn't done that, you know, for them. I mean, you know, there might be some momentary satisfaction, but it's a different path to take to try and expunge those feelings without exacting, you know, a like for like kind of justice, if you like.
Right. Well, and he talks about how, you know, the Khmer Rouge would have, in a sense, won if he had sought revenge, if he had fallen followed through with that, because it would have, Khmer Rouge would have turned him into the person that he was not.
You know,
that prior to that regime, he and his family were, you know, peaceful people. They were Buddhist. They were devout. They, you know, always saw beauty in humanity. And after the Khmer Rouge, it changed him. And he knew that that would have been them winning if he'd taken that step. So, yeah, he has a every time I listen to his story, all these three stories, I just I get something new every time, even though I've been living this film for 7 years.
And then the third story.
Yeah. So the third story I came across actually because my partner, Jim, we went to Australia for a couple of months for work. And I was aware of the story of the Stolen Generations, which for people who haven't heard of the Stolen Generations are, it's essentially government. The government took Aboriginal children, most often Aboriginal children of mixed ancestry, away from their families and raised them in orphanages and, in the case of our subject, in a foster care.
And they actually took them, didn't they? I mean, it's hard to believe.
They forcibly took them. Absolutely. One day the kids are in school. Mom goes to pick them up. They're not there anymore. In the case of Deborah, the government, you know, came with social workers and took, I believe, five children in a car and just drove away with these children, mom watching in horror. But Deborah was taken when she was a baby, so she didn't have memories of that. And so her story was discovering that, in fact, she was a member of the Stolen Generation, and because she just knew that she was raised in foster care. And it was a very abusive foster care. So, you know, it's her discovery of her ancestry, of her heritage, but then also where does forgiveness fit in with a story like that? And the reason I was interested in Stolen Generations in particular was because I was aware that the government had, that the prime minister had given a very formal apology in front of parliament in, you know, national television, live television. That in 2008. And so I was curious what kind of impact that kind of, you know, this grand statement of apology has on people who've experienced something like that. And thinking, I can't imagine that ever happening here in the United States. So I was curious. And so that's how we found Deborah.
And I think one of the things that's interesting, well, there's lots of things that are interesting about the film, but the fact that the stories are so different. And I think, you know, there's this human kind of natural desire to sort of do comparisons, you know, and I was sort of thinking, well, they're so different. You know, here you've got this awful Khmer Rouge, you know, sort of torture and killing and treatment. Then you've got this mother whose son was murdered in cold blood. And then you've got this lady who's taken away and, you know, sexually and mentally and emotionally abused. And, you know, I started thinking, you know, well, actually, they're all so different and the suffering involved in each of them is just so unique. You can't sort of say, oh, this was worse or this was better or whatever.
No.
But it really gives you an insight into the nature of suffering and how it makes one feel inside, I think, is more universal than the acts that predicate it, you know. And then from that, you get the sense that the way through it also has a perhaps more universality than one might think in terms of trying to gain a place of peace.
Absolutely. And I think another thing where, you know, I was interested in with this film was the role of anger and the time it takes for us to heal. Often when forgiveness stories are told in the, you know, mainstream media, and a lot of this has to do with time limits, especially in TV news, you have only a couple minutes to tell a story, so you've got to consolidate it very quickly to its raw elements. But what you lose is that I think the shortest time period between, you know, act of violence and forgiveness in this film was Marion Doshay, which was, she churned about this for 12 years. It took her 12 years before she was in a place to meet with O'Shea. And the time frame is longer for Deborah and for Ki Long, and really wanting to explore what that journey was, that it wasn't just this moment of miraculous, I'm going to forgive you now because I am some, you know, magical altruistic being, but that this is a struggle and it's a journey, but it's a journey whose destination, if you can get there, is truly profound and healing.
Yes. So. Yeah. And although I was talking about the universality perhaps of the actual process of forgiveness, it's probably very unique to each person how you get to that point, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that brings back in the questions of religion, in the sense that Mary's impetus was very much her religious faith in bringing this question up over the years of forgiveness. You know, she was raised Christian, and this notion that, you know, forgiveness is a core tenet there, a very strong one. And, you know, that is not to say that every Christian is good at this.
No, no.
But but for her, that was her motivation.
Yes.
You know, that is not necessarily the core motivator for Ki Long or Deborah.
Right.
Each of them has their own way of getting there.
Yeah. So Miranda, I was thinking we see so many films featuring violence and retribution, and they're very popular, you know, even if it's sort of in a more kind of archetypal way with sort of superheroes or whatever. There are a lot of films with violence and retribution, or in inverted commas, justice is served. What appetite do you think is there out there for a film about forgiveness?
That's a great question. I think really the timeline of this is really critical. As John spoke about, typically you have the reason why you're able to do a film about vengeance is because vengeance is quick.
Yes.
Even in our story with, you know, Mary talking about O'Shea, in the immediate aftermath of her son's death, one, she's absorbing this grief. She's talking about the physical impact of it on her, how she went after him, you know, through the courts and made sure that he was prosecuted. And she says that she felt like he was an animal that deserved to be caged. She wanted first degree murder. She wanted life. So all those instincts, you know, with regard to revenge and vengeance are present in each of these stories very clearly. And if you were to tell them, you know, within 2, 3, 4, 5 years of the timeline of their lives, that's what the story, like what they wanted to do, how it worked out. I mean, you could have ended Mary's story with O'Shea being in prison.
Yes.
But that's not where it ends. So I think there needs to be, I think this story is, the way we've told these stories is really kind of pivotal in that respect, that there's more to what happens over the course of a lifetime than these moments are core, and can change a life. But what happens with your life subsequently is more than any one moment. It's a series of moments that radiate outward. And I think we do that well in this film and talk about those touch points over the course of these people's lives. And I think demonstrating how to do that in this film, I think will be kind of helpful in figuring out how to tell a longer story when it comes to these really traumatic moments.
Well, I think you make a good point about, you know, vengeance being quick, because increasingly we live in this sort of instant gratification culture. And I think, you know, the whole magic bullet idea in lots of different ways, you know, whether it be health or, you know, a whole range of areas in our lives, seems to be more and more appealing to people. And the more our lives speed up. But the reality is that, like you're saying, a lot of really living life on a deeper level can't be led, you know, at that kind of speed.
I think it's interesting. I was actually thinking about this yesterday, our our world premiere on Saturday was in the same theater as the remake of Death Wish, which I don't know if your listeners
yes.
remember that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it really is. It's, you know, just days and weeks after, it's an action movie. And so it's these acts of revenge and vengeance and vigilantism that's the whole story. And yeah, you can do that in a month.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about, as you said, you know, the life course, we're all more than a moment, each and every one of us.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also what Dawna alluded to with Keelong is that, you know, in a way, following that route, you're becoming what, you know, has destroyed you. You know, I mean, you're just becoming what hurt you. And I don't think that ultimately can lead anywhere good.
Yeah. And that's a very real thing.
I mean,
if your vengeance is to kill someone or torture someone, you are now a murderer and a killer.
Yeah.
And that's something that you know, that Keelong talks about explicitly in the course of the film, that for what he had been through, he should have.
Yeah.
But he chose a different path. And yes, it is a choice.
Yeah.
It is a process.
Yeah.
It involves multiple people. And none of the folks in this film are in this alone either. Which is a critical element that you may not see, but you hear as they speak for themselves that,
yeah.
you know, Deborah was instructed to learn to forgive by the elders in her community after she discovered it was her community, after she connected to them, after they've engaged with her on trying to find a path to healing. This is something that they instructed her to do.
Yes.
For too long. You know, he left the country with one of his sisters and returned to see the rest of them and had this opportunity for revenge that was brought to him by another member of the community. And then he decided to do something else. And when he did something else, that involved an enormous number of people, as you can very clearly see.
Right. Yeah.
And then Marion O'Shea, you know, the opportunity she's presented with over the course of this process involved people her coming to mind for folks and thinking, Mary might benefit from this, and her reading, you know, information that was left to her in places where she was convening with people, and how she felt this need to convene others who had similar experiences and needing to kind of clean a slate in order to do that well and properly. And that's where this comes in. So vengeance is something, revenge is something you can do alone. Forgiveness.
Yeah.
In many ways is a community effort. It's a communal effort. It's the essence of people together.
Yeah.
And I think that comes out in this film.
But yeah. And I think also, I mean, we've talked about the spiritual aspects, whether it's the sort of Aboriginal spiritual tradition or Christianity of forgiveness. But I think what comes across in the film, and it's important to remember that, you know, there is a sort of idealistic element to this, but actually that aside, there is the real benefit is to the person who is forgiving for their own life. It's not like they're just, you know, going on some sort of high ground and like, yes, I forgive you, you know, and I'm a good person now. It's actually for them in a way, which it seems perverse in some regards.
Yeah, I think the distinction between forgiveness and reconciliation is very clear in the film. And for each of the storytellers telling their own story, that forgiveness was something they did for themselves to release it, release the burden of the hurt.
If you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic this week, could you forgive the unforgivable? My special guests are filmmakers Dawn Mikkelsen and Miranda Wilson talking about the documentary feature Risking Light, which highlights three stories of people who have managed to move through terrible suffering to forgive the unforgivable. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle, and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda Yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic this week, Could You Forgive the Unforgivable? With my special guests, filmmakers Dawn Mikkelsen and Miranda Wilson. And if you're interested in finding out more about their documentary feature, which is about this very subject, you can go to the film website, riskinglight.com. Now, Dawn, you've said that you saw the subject of this film as evergreen, but that you've seen in the last year particular resonance of the film's subject with where we find ourselves currently in America. I'm wondering, what do you feel the film has to offer us, particularly in this present moment?
It's interesting because, we've been talking a lot about this vengeance is easy, vengeance is quick, and we are in this time when we are in social media, there things are getting so tense and there's so much going on, and to be able to step back and think about other ways of interacting with one another. It's funny because about a year ago we were wrapping up elements of post-production of this film. We were getting to this place where it was getting solid, and our election had just taken place, and the Women's March, and the level of anger and, in many ways justified anger was very, very high. And I remember thinking to myself about a year ago, is this the time for risking light? I'm not sure it is, because I do think that we need time to feel. There's a reason we have anger. It's an important emotion. It's an emotion that says something has been violated and something needs to happen. It's an action emotion. It's when that anger starts eating you from the inside. It's when it loses its value. And, a year later, we're starting to come to this place of now what? Now where do we go from here? So the fact that the film is done and the film is having its premiere right now feels important. It feels like, I get very, I use the term woo-woo, but I get kind of a woo-woo about when things happen throughout the production of this film.
Yeah.
And its release is one of those things where it feels like it's the time to start having these conversations as a culture.
Yeah. And I think you mentioning about, anger is an important emotion to help us often to realize that something isn't right. And I think it's important to remember that, the process of forgiveness, it's not replacing, trying to also have some means of justice or change. But it might alter what that justice or change looks like. Perhaps, you know, being more restorative, as you talked about, rather than just purely punitive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is one of the things that I think is most important about these conversations about forgiveness, is it does not take away the your right and your motivation to make a difference and to make change. It's not to say that whatever happened to you was okay or justifiable in any way. And so, you know, for the case of Deborah in Australia, this means that she continues to work for healing for members of the Stolen Generation. And, you know, she talks about true reconciliation for her is when the health disparity is no longer there, because she believes that the health disparity that is experienced by Aboriginal communities has to do with trauma.
And
interesting. Yeah. So, you know, the thought of looking at an Aboriginal mother and saying your baby will live as long as that white woman's child, that's reconciliation.
Yeah.
And so for her, the forgiveness didn't dull her desire for change. It just focused it on things that were about healing and building up.
Yeah. And the film is called Risking Light. I'm wondering how you came to choose that title and what risk is involved with forgiveness, would you say?
It's interesting because we processed this one for a while. And one of the things about it was that, you know, first, the easiest one is light. And that is that anytime you interview people who have gone through a forgiveness process, the word light will come up. It just does. And whether that means a feeling of lightness, release from something that's dragging them down, or, you know, I mean, people have talked about, you know, feeling light.
Yeah.
The solar light, you know,
yeah.
Or I'm not sure if that's the right term, but light comes into play a lot. And risking is that piece of the journey. It's the fact that you have to be vulnerable in this process. I don't want to say that vengeance is easy, but vengeance keeps you from having those moments of vulnerability and feeling your pain. And processing your pain in a way that people who do this forgiveness work need to process.
Yeah.
And that's how they get there. And so it's a risk. It's painful. But
because you have to open up something, you mean?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. You have to open that up, and that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're considering the question, could you forgive the unforgivable? I'm wondering, both of you, what your personal feelings on this are and whether being involved with this film has changed how you feel about it, whether you took something different away from working on this project than you expected. Maybe, Miranda, I'll put that to you first.
I think what I've learned through this process making this film is it is possible with patience and time and a certain amount of resolve to forgive almost anything. And that it is about the self, about it would, in that case, it would be about me and the process I needed to go through and not the other person. And that the amount of time it takes is the amount of time it takes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that, when it comes to, I don't know. I hope that I will never have to forgive anything as big as these folks have endured. But I would like to think that these lessons are, you know, universal, and I could apply them to my life. And also that I know I wouldn't be alone. I know that that there's a lot to be done, a lot of opportunity, and that it doesn't. I think one of the things I like best about the film is that they don't all do the same thing with it.
Right.
They each forgive, but what they move forward forward and to do. I mean, Deborah's gotten, you know, gone on to get further education and to go about, you know, achieving health outcomes. And, you know, Keelong is focused on education and Mary is on really community building and building bridges. And I think that that's something, I think that if that's something that's profoundly traumatic happened to me, I would understand that there would, that it could not, it, there's a way for it to not be for naught.
Yes. And I think it's so interesting what you're saying. I think, you know, obviously the people in the film have really suffered, but I think what you gain from seeing their stories is definitely transferable to the lightest transgression right up to, you know, the worst thing that could happen to one. So I think that's definitely a good point. What about you, Dawn? With regard to could you forgive the unforgivable, you know, how might your feelings have changed on this with making the film?
It's interesting. A couple of thoughts come to mind. One is that before I started this film, I was single, and now I am I have a partner. We've gotten married and we have two children. And so in particular, Mary's story has different resonance for me now as a mother, and the thought of losing a child. And I hope that and again, back to Miranda's thoughts of, I hope something like that never, ever, ever happens to me. But knowing that, that there's a possibility of life after something like that, is hopeful. I will also say that, again, this idea that this can happen on any level is critical. Working on the film, there were a handful of times, I mean, 7 years, where the film would grind to a halt for some reason or another, and we wouldn't know why. And it's like, why can't we make any forward movement? And most of those times, at least in my case, there was something I had to deal with in my own life that I wasn't dealing with. And often it was around forgiveness, whether it be forgiving somebody from my past, whether it be forgiving myself.
Yes.
And so, you know, if it did grind to a halt, I would sit back and say, okay, now what am I not dealing with? And often once I dealt with my own issues, my own unforgiveness, the film would move forward again. So I think it works on a number of levels, and my hope is that people connect this to their more everyday pain.
Yeah.
That you don't have to experience profound trauma to take this journey.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's not the major part of this film. I mean, we see it somewhat with O'Shea, but I think forgiving oneself is also something that's very difficult. I mean, we can have a very sort of vicious oppressor part of ourselves, you know, that when we've done anything wrong, you know, I'm not talking perhaps necessarily about, you know, the things as awful as what's in this film, but that is part of all of this too, isn't it? Of how do we forgive ourselves for not being perfect or for even doing, you know, terrible things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What attracts you to the documentary format of filmmaking to tell stories rather than fiction? Because, you know, any of these stories could have been made into a fiction sort of drama. What do you feel that, you know, the documentary format offers?
That's a tough one. I've never. I have always been drawn as a storyteller to documentary. As a viewer of film, I love narrative film. but there's something to be said for the power of people who you know are real, who live in this world with you.
Yeah.
And being able to see their stories, and it gives it that much more of an immediacy for me of, you know, again, I can apply this to my life in some way, or I care about this issue more because this is happening to this person right here. I see them in front of me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think the form of documentary has grown so much over the past 20 years. 20, 30 years. You know, when I was growing up, I was watching, you know, PBS, and God bless it. I love PBS, still do work with PBS. But, you know, there was the nature documentaries of, you know, the here's an animal and that animal gets hunted. And, you know, like documentary has shifted to be much more of a narrative form.
That's
true. To the point where I've seen a couple of films recently where I'm like, oh, was that, I don't know what was that? Was that a documentary or was that a narrative? And you have to kind of like look it up and find out. And that has been really exciting to watch.
Yes.
So I love this form. I love the fact that you can go out and collect stories and that they tell themselves through the process of the edit.
Yes,
that
absolutely.
You have an idea. You have an idea of where it's heading, but really the film leads itself.
Yeah.
And you just get to go along for the ride. And that is a fun ride.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, you bring up a good point. The editing is, I mean, key in any film, but I think particularly in documentaries, you say that is when you are really creating the story by what you choose to include and how, in what order and how you put it together and everything.
Yes.
And obviously that is the art of documentary filmmaking, which is done really wonderfully in this film, I have to say. So we're coming to the end of the show now. Miranda, I just wanted to ask you if you had a particular audience in mind when you were making the film, who do you hope that the film reaches?
Oh, that's interesting. Especially since we've worked on this for so long, there's so many audiences that we've had in mind with each story and each framing. I'm going to say really, you know, personally, I hope that this reaches people who are in the thick of things, who have who don't know what to do with their hurt, whether it's personal trauma, forgiving themselves. I think you raised the point of O'Shea in one of the moments in the film where he talks a few times about the process of forgiving himself and whether that's possible. I think that these lessons apply to forgiving yourself, forgiving others for what they've done to you, and forgiving. I think it's also a challenge to forgive those who wronged someone you care about. I think that, you know, there's a lot of organizations that focus on forgiveness, but I think what I'm hoping is that people who find themselves trying to figure out what to do with the hurt will find their way to this film, and have another tool to kind of lift this off of themselves and find a way forward.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for talking to me, Miranda. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Dawn, also. And people going forward, if they want to follow the film and its progress and where they might potentially be able to see it going forward, the best thing is to go to riskinglight.com, is it?
Yeah, the website is where we'll have our screenings coming up and people can get in contact with us, get on our mailing list. We also, you know, have Instagram and Facebook pages too, so you can follow us there, Risking Light, in both places. So.
Okay, great. Well, I wish you all the very best with it. It's a really wonderful film. So I hope that a lot of people will see it. And thank you for coming and talking to me.
Thank you for having us. This has been wonderful.
So just to remind listeners again, you can go to riskinglight.com. You'll be able to find out how to follow the film on Facebook and other social media there, and also get information of where it might be near you. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to you joining me again next time.